President McFarland, President Hyatt, distinguished people of the Stage Party, alumni, members of the class of 1974, parents, and other friends of the university, it is my honor and pleasure as Provost of the Northern Region of the University of Alaska to welcome you this afternoon to our 52nd commencement on this campus. Now, for 52 commencements, we have had one person in the audience who has attended all. At this time, I would like Mrs. Ruth Barrick to stand. Ruth? Accomplishment that no one can equal, Ruth. We're certainly very happy to have you here, and we hope that we see you for many more. This time, I'd also like to acknowledge the presence of Ann Stevens, wife of the Honorable Ted Stevens, Senator from Alaska. Ann, you... And our Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, H.A. Red Boucher. You know, I can't quite see all of the faces here, but we do have one other person that I'd like to introduce at this time, and that is the distinguished alumnus for 1974. This is Mr. John O'Shea. John was a graduate of the class of 1939. Also, John, are you here today? He must be. Oh, he is. Okay. Certainly, John, we ask you to represent today the classes of 1924, 34, 44, 54, 64, and 74, honor classes for this year. To begin today's program, the very Reverend William J. Loyens will give the invocation.
O Lord, our God and Father, we call upon you to be with us today as we celebrate the beginning of a new life for our graduates. We stand before you today to thank you for all your gifts. We thank you for the joy of learning, for the wonders of human invention, for the companionship of friends, and for the gift of your loving spirit. We come together in the name of Jesus, your Son and our brother. He came in your name to teach us how to live. He taught us that your love makes it possible for us to be ourselves, to be free, and free to love and share. We pray in his name, who reunited us with you, and who would have us live in harmony with one another, Jesus Christ, our teacher and redeemer. Amen.
We had the pleasure 2 weeks ago to inaugurate as the fifth president of the University of Alaska, Dr. Rubya W. Hyatt. Although he assumed the office last July, this is the first commencement on this campus in which he has participated. During this interim, he has become exceptionally well acquainted with many facets of Alaska and the University of Alaska, and is pursuing his responsibilities with understanding, enthusiasm, and determination. I am sincerely pleased at this time to present our university president, Dr. Robert W. Hyatt, who in turn will introduce our commencement speaker. Dr. Hyatt.
Provost Beislein, President McFarland, honored guests, alumni, graduates and their families, faculty, and friends of the university. The key to Alaska's continued development is an adequate communication system, which, because of our geography, must be different than those in the other states and must depend on the most technologically advanced electronic systems available. 3 years ago, our speaker authorized the purchase of the Air Force's Alaska Communications System and simultaneously established the RCA Alaska Communications System, commonly known as ALASCOM. Since then, satellite ground facilities and microwave transmission systems have been rapidly developed throughout the state. Because we believe communications to be of paramount significance to Alaska, we have chosen to honor today a trio of leaders in that field, both on the national and the local scene. Our speaker ably represents the entire range of information and communications, for he has served over 30 years in these fields. And he has been widely acclaimed the world over, not only for his distinguished contributions to a broad spectrum of communications, but also for his support of higher education and the arts and letters, and for his distinguished service on collegiate governing boards and to our government in many capacities. Now head of one of the world's great electronics and communications corporations, which employs half as many people as there are in this entire state, and has gross corporate earnings almost half again greater than Alaska's total gross state product, this remarkable man still finds time to contribute his talents to all those lofty human endeavors central to a university's objectives. It is a special pleasure and a distinct honor to present to you Dr. Robert W. Sarnoff.
President Hyatt, President McFarland, members of the Board of Regents, graduating class, faculty, family, friends, and other distinguished guests. Thank you for inviting me to join you in this commencement celebration at the nation's northernmost campus. I'm deeply grateful also for the distinction you are conferring upon me. As a representative of electronic communications, I am particularly pleased to share honors with Bill Hurst and Howard Rock, who have made such distinguished contributions in the field of print communications. On top of all this, you handed me an easy assignment. The commencement speaker usually has to cast about for fresh words to tell the graduating class that it faces both challenge and opportunity. You don't have to be told. You are already fully alert to the implications and opportunities as Alaska enters what Governor Egan aptly calls a time of destiny being fulfilled. The next few years should bring accelerated growth and development to Alaska. Oil and other energy resources will flow in rising volume from your vast reserves. Expanding modern communications will foster more rapid social and economic progress. These advances should both generate and attract new capital to invest in further growth. The stage is set, in fact, for a reenactment in modern dress of the dramatic sequence that transformed the lower 48 states from a frontier to a complex and prosperous society. But there should be an immense difference in the way it happens here. I think of Alaska not as the nation's last frontier, but its first. The first frontier to be opened with the age of space age technology. The first frontier where systematic development can avoid the mistakes of the past. And Alaska is approaching its development with logic and foresight. Your state government is wisely anticipating the great impact of the oil pipeline and subsequent industrial development on the economic and social fabric of Alaska. A pioneering federal state effort is developing long-range plans for land use and transportation throughout the state. It has already produced the nation's first statewide resources inventory. Here at the university, you are planning further development of an already outstanding educational system to broaden the intellectual horizons and multiply the technical skills of Alaskans tomorrow. These are timely preparations for a great change that will affect not only Alaska, but eventually all of the vast and potentially wealthy northern regions of the world. Modern electronic communications and jet transport have already brought the most remote of these areas within easy reach. Now the urgent worldwide demand for new energy and mineral resources portends a large-scale industrial invasion. The problem of the North in general, and of Alaska in particular, is no longer isolation, but the prevention of a runaway development and exploitation on a scale once associated with colonialism. Obviously, Alaskans intend to make certain that this does not happen. Your determination represents a happy departure from the mainstream of our nation's history. For most of its life, the United States has developed its resources and confronted its problems as if there were no tomorrow. We improvised our way to greatness, enriching ourselves in the process by the random exploitation of our land and its bounty. The costs were long concealed amid the wealth of new territory and untapped resources awaiting a sparse population. But today our cities are crowded and our best land fully employed. We have developed a complex industrial society that depends heavily upon advanced technology. Our nation has become the greatest of powers, and its condition is a vital and immediate concern to a once remote world. There is no longer infinite room for indifference or error. Yet the heritage of improvidence remains distressingly strong. We still isolate our national problems and treat them by expedient, whether dealing with fuel shortages, educational deficiencies, or the use of land. But the needs of an organized modern society cannot be met by unorganized methods. They call for comprehensive national planning and the long-term commitment of national resources. Nowhere is the need for new attitudes more evident than in the critical field of science and technology. Every facet of modern industrial society reflects the influence of scientific research and engineering applications. From the synthetic fabrics we wear to the satellite communications that weave a global network of instant sight and sound. Our future growth and prosperity hinge very largely upon continued research and development and orderly introduction of the results. So far, we have proceeded in this area more by impulse than by design. We have gained immeasurably from a free flow of scientific discoveries and their application to new materials, systems, and services. But because of failure to consider all of the possible consequences, we have also compiled a dismal record of technological blight. Automation on the land has filled urban ghettos with refugees from rural unemployment. Industrial activity has loaded the air with chemicals and stripped the cover from portions of the countryside. Our waters are polluted by industrial and municipal waste, our food by massive application of pesticides, and our daily lives by noxious odors and shattering noise. We are compelled to develop far-reaching social programs and costly counter-technologies to repair the damage and prevent further deterioration. It should be obvious that we cannot continue, in Lerman Eisley's phrase, to hurl ourselves recklessly and without method upon a future that we ourselves have complicated. Yet, this is precisely what we are doing in the absence of any coherent long-range policy and program for the use of the nation's technological skills and resources. Over the past 10 years, total R&D spending from all sources, government and private, has declined in relation to the gross national product from a high of 3% in 1964 to 2.4% last year. Federal government support for these activities has given the appearance of growing, but over the last 5 years, it has actually declined in constant dollars because of cost inflation. More importantly, the nature of this support shows serious distortions. Vital long-range needs are slighted while emphasis is given to programs of high visibility. Thus, cancer and heart and lung research are allocated more funds than some specialist thinks they can use effectively, while the budget is cut for R&D in the equally vital fields of mental health and delivery of health care. Action is more often motivated by crises than by anticipated needs. Thus, a massive program is launched in energy research and development only after scarcity of oil has disrupted the economy. Projects are hastily undertaken in a quest for swift results, rather than after studies to determine their feasibility. Thus, development funds have been wasted in premature application of advanced technology to ambitious pilot programs in urban mass transportation. Insufficient concern is shown for the future supply of scientists and engineers, although many more will be needed. Thus, while the government is the prime source of funds for university R&D, plant, and equipment, its spending in this category has declined sharply and steadily for 10 years. And at the same time, the number of federally supported graduate students in science has dropped significantly. The new federal R&D budget perpetuates all of the strains and imbalances. It is the largest in the nation's history, up by 10% from last year's figure to a level just short of $20 billion. But just about half is for defense programs, and nearly all of the non-military increase is earmarked for energy. With the exception of a further appreciable rise in spending on cancer and heart and lung research, most other sectors will get only cost of living increases or no increases at all. Nowhere in the new budget, including the swollen energy sector, is there evidence of central leadership or clear design. The vast new $1.8 billion energy R&D program is distributed mostly among four different and sometimes competing agencies: the Atomic Energy Commission, the Department of Interior, the National Science Foundation, and the Environmental Protection Agency. It shows every sign of having been conceived in haste. Only time will tell whether we shall repent at leisure. There appears to be no relationship to any long-term policy other than a general commitment to a goal loosely described as independence from foreign energy sources. Is this to be taken literally? And if so, is it feasible or even desirable? Or is the objective merely to lessen the nation's dependence on any one area so that we can find alternate sources or makeshift on our own in case of emergency? Some clarification may eventually come from the new Federal Energy Administration, whose establishment was approved by Congress several weeks ago. The agency has been given authority to coordinate and develop a comprehensive national energy strategy. but it will take time to draft a master plan, and there is no provision for the FEA to coordinate research activities that will be going forward under the 1975 budget. As for the program itself, there is reason to ask whether the best balance has been struck between short-term and long-term needs and among various energy technologies. Of the entire energy R&D budget, 26% of $473 million is earmarked for developing a single type of fast breeder reactor for nuclear power. According to some expert opinion, breeder technology promises to be cheaper in the long run than other nuclear techniques. But it may not become economically attractive until the early decades of the next century. Should this take priority over other energy-related research and development with prospects of an earlier payoff? There are many such questions that can be answered only by thoroughgoing study and debate in the context of a sound national policy for energy development and use. Until such a policy is evolved, we may expect to incur extra costs in the form of overlapping projects, duplication of previous results, premature application of untested methods, and jurisdictional disputes. As another case in point, consider the recent overwhelming approval by the House of Representatives for a $50 million pilot program to test the use of solar energy for heating and cooling buildings. Responsibility was assigned to the National Aeronautics and Space Administration and the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Despite indications of equally strong support among senators for such a program, it may be shelved as a result of jurisdictional and technical disagreements. The National Science Foundation contends that it would duplicate its own efforts. The AEC argues that it should have responsibility. Rival bills have been offered in the Senate supporting the claims of the different agencies. Although the solar project is only a small fraction of the total national effort in science and technology, its plight should arouse concern about the organization and direction of all the rest. Against this background, it is disturbing to recall that the administration has done away with the top-level machinery that supplied scientific advice to the White House for nearly 15 years. It abolished the Office of Science Advisor to the President, the President's Science Advisory Committee, and the Office of Science and Technology. In place of this mechanism, there is now an advisory apparatus consisting of the National Science Foundation and several related offices. All are under the head of the NSF, who also has the function of Presidential Science Advisor, but without the top-level access enjoyed by his predecessors. It is a somewhat cumbersome arrangement whose influence on the direction of government-sponsored research and development seems to depend entirely on the willingness of various agencies to seek its advice. This cannot be considered an adequate response to the urgent need for national leadership and effective machinery for comprehensive planning and long-term commitment of our scientific and technological resources. I recently proposed for this purpose a strong new independent agency to bring the diverse government programs into a unified policy framework based on long-term national needs, both civilian and military. This new science and technology board would be created by Act of Congress. It would be a focal point for planning and coordinating all government-supported research, development, and technical education. It would set national priorities in science and technology and shape our programs accordingly. I propose that board members be presidential appointees with Senate confirmation, selected from among leaders in basic science, applied research, and engineering. The board itself would be concerned with major policy issues and programs looking decades ahead. It should therefore receive full legislative support to plan and budget on a large scale farther into the future than ever before. The board would also maintain close ties with industry and university scientific and engineering communities and seek their cooperation in developing policy and programs. When I first made this proposal last February, it stimulated interest among a number of congressmen and senators. Dr. James Hillier, RCA's Executive Vice President of Research and Engineering, and other members of my staff have since been cooperating with senatorial staff members in preparation of a detailed outline, which has now been referred to the Office of the Senate Legislative Council for use in preparing a first draft of legislation. I am hopeful that all of this may help toward resolution of the disorder that prevails today in the national approach to science and technology. As Alaskans, you may have more to offer than others in devising solutions. You start with a clean slate, confronting a great expanse of untapped wealth and natural beauty. You have managed to break from our historical pattern by making an excellent start toward rational development of your skills and resources. Yet, as Americans, you also share in the national problem and its costs. And from the experience of our past, you can find reinforcement for your resolve to pursue a wiser course. It is also always useful to bear in mind the ease with which the costly illusion of inexhaustible riches can seize the minds of a vigorous and ambitious people and the unhappy consequences that follow. Of all the resources that enrich Alaska, none is worth more than the determination of skilled and educated men and women to direct the growth of the state and its ties with the world for the enduring benefit of their own and future generations. This university represents a commitment to that goal. As graduates, you will have the power and ability to achieve it. I have no fear that you will repeat the history that now burdens the lower 48 with the accumulated costs and ingrained habits that stem from yesterday's improvidence. To the contrary, I believe that your future will be what ours should have been. I congratulate you at your commencement, and I envy you your opportunity.
Will the candidates for the associate degree please rise? Will the candidates for the baccalaureate degree please rise? Will the candidates for master's degrees please rise? Will the candidate for the educational specialist degree please rise? Will the candidate for the doctoral degrees please rise? President Hyatt, it is my pleasure to present these candidates for the associate, the baccalaureate, the master's, the educational specialist, and the doctoral degree. The registrar has certified that all have fulfilled academic requirements for their special degrees. The faculties of the colleges concerned have recommended that they now receive their diplomas.
Regent McFarland, as president of the University of Alaska, I present these candidates for degrees from their respective departments of instruction as recorded in the official program.
By virtue of the authority vested in me as president of the Board of Regents under the Constitution of the State of Alaska And upon recommendation of the President of the University and the faculty, I confer upon you the Associate, Baccalaureate, Master's, Education Specialist, and Doctoral degrees to which you are entitled, with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto.
Please be seated. The candidates will be awarded their diplomas in the order given in the official program. The dean of each college will present the associate and baccalaureate degree candidates from his college. By way of explanation, the gold cord on the shoulders of certain candidates indicates they are being graduated with honors. This requires a grade point average of 3.5 or better, which means practically all A's in their coursework.
The candidates from the College of Arts and Letters will be presented by Dean Walter J. Mueller. Will the candidates from Dean Mueller's college please rise and come forward? We ask that the audience withhold applause until the last candidate from each college has received his diploma.
Members of the faculty, it is a day of vicarious satisfaction in the attainments of the usually more youthful members of the college or their university, and to Regents and administration, it is a day for giving thanks that the institution committed to their charge has merited such support as to grow an academic stature and service to the society whose welfare it was founded to promote. There's another group of important people for whom this day holds special significance, and I should like to recognize them now. Each student who has graduated today represents sacrifice on someone's part, whether it be in money, or time, or companionship. Much of the sacrifice has been made by the citizens of Alaska and of the United States as they pay taxes for the support of this university. But sacrifice is also involved on the part of the families of the students who have graduated today. I should like the mothers, the fathers, sisters, brothers, wives, husbands, and children of those who have been awarded degrees today to stand up so that the graduates, the faculty, and the administrators may applaud you for the role you have played in providing for their education. Will you all stand up, please? Thank you very much. Now I should like to address a few remarks to the graduates. To those of you who have this day been awarded degrees from this university, a new relationship has come into your lives. By the action taken today, this university has placed its seal of approval on you. You and Alma Mater are inextricably bound together for the balance of your lives. The university's academic programs are altered continually to ensure their fundamental quality and timely relevance to the explosion of knowledge and the rapidly changing political, social, economic, and cultural character of our world. We proudly look forward to your successful performance as a highly educated member of our increasingly complex society. We've been living in a revolutionary age in which has confronted us with incredibly complicated problems and collective decisions. The generation graduating here today has been through more than its share in the past decade, with wrenching, scarring social changes, with casualty lists and those fateful telegrams, with abrupt detente between the United States and other great powers, held for over a quarter century to be our most baneful political antagonists, with an eerie, almost somnambulist presidential election, with Watergate headlines and the TV scenario, with the Mideast crises and with the Kent State massacre following the Cambodia bombings, with the vice president resigning because of acknowledged criminal action, and a president under deep suspicion undergoing impeachment, the presidential tapes now materializing, now dematerializing, with millions of TV viewers seeing and hearing the president disavow he is a crook, and finally, with the blockbuster of an energy crisis. Now, our job as educational leaders and your responsibility as informed citizens is to ensure that these tumultuous and torturous times lead us to improvements in our society rather than to its destruction, imperfect as it is. Thus, we need understanding, and we must not be put off by the cliches of inevitable generation gaps. You must never forget that to provide you with the educational opportunity you've had, your fellow citizens gave up present satisfactions in the interests of the future. I think they did this not so that you could make more money, appear more polished, or win more fame, but rather from a conviction seldom articulated that the only way to build a better society is to improve the quality of the human beings which make up that society. And one of the things which becomes increasingly apparent to all thoughtful persons contemplating human betterment is the absolute necessity for the continuation of learning throughout life. The rapidly changing nature of our times and the tremendous growth in the production of new knowledge and techniques makes it simply impossible in the 20th century, if it ever was, for an individual to learn in a formal school experience all that he must know to continue to be effective as a producer, as a consumer, and most importantly, as a citizen and a rational human being. Your obligation as a highly educated citizen can be discharged only if you strive to continue growing, to question existing institutions, to involve yourself deeply by participating in public affairs, and to maintain an awareness that the greatest sin of all is the failure to realize your total potential. The academic degree conferred upon you today is symbolic of a major personal accomplishment which will remain with you always. I know I can speak for the state in wishing for each of you, being graduated here today, a very happy future. I hope that it is productive and fulfilling as well by your own measure.
Norman Chip Wagner will speak for the class of 1974. Chip.
He made this expressly for me. Fellow Alaskans of this great land, friends and guests of the state of Alaska and the University of Alaska. A university, agree, it is assumed, represents acquired knowledge, intelligence, and the ability to write a paragraph in the English language. However, these are false assumptions because not all of us have intelligence above and beyond those people without degrees. Also, it is a fallacy because not everyone here can write a paragraph in the English language as well as others with a non-degree. However, a degree is an achievement which the parents, the faculty, and the administration may be proud of. It's an achievement for endurance. These students have thank you. Many, many students have come to this university and to other universities and have failed. These students have made it. They are successful. They have endured the academic system. Now, it's been said that the academic system at the University of Alaska is deficient, below standard, not up to par. And this also is a fallacy. It is only simply a little easier to endure here at this institution than at other institutions. And why, you might ask, why is it easier to endure? Well, I'll tell you, it's because of the people. We have secretaries that will stay 15 minutes after the office is supposed to close to help a student that may have a problem. It's the physical plant worker that donates his free time and expertise to help a student organization with a class project on campus. It's a faculty member that will spend hours upon hours trying to tutor an individual student with either a personal problem or an academic problem. And this doesn't show up on the student-faculty ratio the legislators are always interested in. But this is where they put their work in, their 40 or 50 or 60 hours a week. This is why it's easier to endure for we students. Also, the administration. Administration member has made it easier to endure by coming to the office on Sunday mornings to get information that students need in order to represent other students in a better way. So if the people in the university community, our home for 4 or 5 or 6 years, they have added credibility and honor to our University of Alaska academic system. However, unfortunately, these people are not seen by the general public. And so we must judge our academic system in another way. And there are only two ways in which we are judged. One is by the name on the degree, University of Alaska. And if we want that name to rise above other institutions of higher learning, we need two things, and there's no way around it. We need two things, leadership, maybe divine guidance, and two, we need the cash. And without those two things, you can forget it. That's what you need for a good, for an excellent higher education system in the state of Alaska. It's expensive. The other name on the degree, which will add credibility and honor to the University of Alaska academic system, is the name of the degree recipient. What we do with our lives and what we do with our degree is going to reflect back on this institution for the rest of its life and the rest of our lives. As Dr. Hyatt just said, the university has put their seal of approval on us. So please, please be strong alumni, and please try to make a success of your life so it reflects back on this institution. Don't drop out, don't flee society, don't plot a revolution. But let's just plod along, turning one stone over at a time, and we will be successful. I'd like to close with the following poem. I don't know where it came from. I didn't write it. I wish I did. But it's something to think about when we go along trying to be productive members of society. When you get what you want in your struggle for self, and the world makes you king for a day, just go to a mirror and look at yourself and see what that man has to say. For it won't be your brother or sister or wife whose judgment upon you must pass, but the one whose verdict counts most in your life is that man looking back from the glass. If you think you're Jack Horner and you've chiseled a plum, and the world says you're a wonderful guy, the man in the glass says you're only a ham if you can't look him straight in the eye. He's the best friend you have, never mind all the rest, for he's with you, clear to the end. And you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test when the man in the glass is your friend. Now you may fool this old world down its pathway of tears and get slaps on the back as you pass, but the final reward will be heartaches and tears if you've treated that man in the glass. I'd like to add one last note. I don't get a chance, being a politician, to come before such a large gathering. But I would like to thank the classes, and especially the students, the class of 1974, for the honor and the privilege and the opportunity to represent you in one form or another during my 5 years here on this campus. Thank you very much.
There are times that a university has within its faculty persons who, on their retirement, merit special recognition for the service they have rendered. Today is one of these times. Provost Beislein, will you please escort William R. Cashin to the rostrum? I should like to read at this time the resolution of the Board of Regents conferring upon William R. Cashin the title of Professor of Mathematics and Marshal of the University Emeritus. Whereas William R. Cashin has served the University of Alaska for an unprecedented 32 years as teacher, administrator, marshal, and chronicler of its founding and development, and whereas this service under all five presidents of the university, of which he is a graduate, was ever marked by dedication and loyalty, and whereas countless students and professional colleagues have over the years benefited from his counsel and enjoyed his friendship, and whereas the interests of the university have been significantly advanced by his writings, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Regents express its deep appreciation to William R. Cashin for his many important contributions to the state of Alaska and its university. And be it further resolved that the Board of Regents, in recognition of the many services William R. Cashin has rendered, and as evidence of its desire that his identification with the university be maintained, hereby appoints William R. Cashin Professor of Mathematics and Marshal of the University Emeritus. And be it further resolved that this resolution be appropriately inscribed, signed by all regents as further evidence of the great esteem and respect in which they hold William R. Cashin, and conveyed to Mr. Cashin with a copy to be included in the official minutes of the May 2nd and 3rd, 1974 meeting of the board, done at Fairbanks, Alaska, the second day of May, 1974. And Bill, it gives me great pleasure to present to you this citation.
In conferring honorary degrees upon distinguished individuals, the University of Alaska is itself honored that two of our nation's best-known business executives are present here today, together with one of our own outstanding Alaskans, makes today's commencement a most memorable occasion. Will Mr. William Randolph Hearst, Jr. please stand? And at this time, I would like to pay special tribute at a time of great tragedy to the Hearst family, that Mr. Hearst would keep his commitment with this university. I think it's a tremendous... Will Mrs. Hearst please stand just for a second? William Randolph Hearst, Jr., editor-in-chief of the Hearst newspapers and a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, has long been associated as one of the nation's most distinguished journalists. He has also been a good friend of Alaska, a champion of its political and economic development. When Alaskans in the early 1950s were fighting for statehood, for the right of self-determination, William Randolph Hearst, Jr. joined the cause. His strong, sustained support of that cause through the Hearst newspapers undoubtedly helped to win the final victory. More recently, he has argued persuasively for construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, asserting it is essential to the national welfare and can be built with minimal environmental degradation. The University of Alaska salutes William Randolph Hearst, Jr. and confers upon him the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws. Mr. Hearst, will you step forward? By virtue of the authority invested in me as President of the Board of Regents under the Constitution of the State of Alaska and upon recommendation of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto. Mr. Robert W. Sarnoff, please stand. Robert W. Sarnoff, Chief Executive Officer of RCA Corporation and Chairman of its Board of Directors, is widely known as a highly capable business executive and pioneer in electronics technology and space communications. Before moving to the presidency of RCA in 1966, he was a top executive with his subsidiary, the National Broadcasting Company, serving 3 years as its president, then more than 7 years as NBC board chairman. Throughout this 10-year period, he also served as NBC's chief executive officer. 3 years ago, he authorized RCA's purchase of the U.S. Air Force Alaska Communications System and the establishment of RCA Alaska Communications to operate the system. Since then, these communications have undergone substantial upgrading through construction of satellite ground facilities and microwave systems and institution of direct long-distance dialing. The University of Alaska salutes Robert W. Sarnoff and confers upon him the honorary degree, Doctor of Laws. By virtue of the authority vested in me as President of the Board of Regents under the Constitution of the State of Alaska and upon recommendation of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto. Will Mr. Howard Rock please stand? Howard Rock, the highly respected founder and editor of the Tundra Times, is being honored here today for his unceasing efforts to promote the welfare of the native people of Alaska and understanding among all peoples. The son of an Eskimo whaling captain, he early learned the skills of the hunter, but the desire to develop his considerable artistic talents led him from Point Hope, the village of his birth, into the broader world where he became a recognized artist. The need for a newspaper representing the native viewpoint was impressed upon him by friends during a visit to Point Hope in 1961. The following year, when financing for it was offered on condition that he became its editor, he accepted the challenge. Through that newspaper, he has encouraged the political organization of the native people and pressed continuously for settlement of their long-standing land claims. The University of Alaska salutes Howard Rock and confers upon him the honorary degree, Doctor of Humane Letters. By virtue of the authority invested in me as President of the Board of Regents, under the Constitution of the State of Alaska, and upon recommendation of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree Doctor of Humanities, with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto.
To the class of 1974, I express our appreciation for what you have given the university during your student years in terms of service and ideas. Many of these ideas certainly have kept us on our toes. On behalf of the faculty and staff, I congratulate you on your scholastic achievements and wish every one of you a creative, stimulating, successful career as you continue your travels along the challenging pathways of life. As a final thought, I encourage you to carry on your future activities by active participation, enticing enthusiasm, and with a positive rather than a negative attitude. To Regent McFarland and members of the Board of Regents and President Hyatt and the statewide administration, I express our sincere thanks for the excellent cooperation received throughout the year. In addition, I would congratulate the appointment of Ronald Wendt, a graduate student from Juneau, to the Board of Regents this year. Ron? Okay, here we go. To the faculty, staff, and Northern Region Administration, my sincere appreciation for major efforts and accomplishments in teaching, research, and allied functions, especially for the extra efforts put forth by many During our self-study for accreditation in the fall of 1974, contributing to the statewide academic development plan currently in process, and for serving on many ad hoc committees appointed during the year, such as the Faculty Student Committee on the Tanana Valley Community College, which are all in addition to the normal teaching, research, business, and public service loads. It's been a busy year, but one that adds a solid stone to the foundation of higher education in Alaska. I'd also, at this time, pay recognition to Professor Charles Keim, who was selected as the outstanding faculty member of the years by students and others on the campus. Chuck, would you stand, please? To those leaving the faculty at the conclusion of this year, I wish you Godspeed and success in your future endeavor. To our marshal, who has been duly honored by the Board of Regents, we add special congratulations for his adult lifetime of service to the university. My sincere thanks to him for his ever-ready assistance and valuable counsel over the years. However, I remind you, Bill, since you now have the emeritus status, that I and you and Ellen plan to continue to live in the Fairbanks area, I see no reason why we cannot call on you to work without being on the payroll of the university. To our legislators, we at the University of Alaska, and especially the Fairbanks campus, thank you for the support and consideration given the northern region during the 1974 legislature. Your continued efforts for the University of Alaska under very difficult conditions will allow higher educational goals and activities to be better achieved for the people of the state. There are many other organizations and companies who have made contributions to our educational endeavors. These, we certainly express our appreciation. Finally, our thanks to all who have worked on the arrangement, the details, and who have participated in our 1974 commencement ceremony. Before concluding this 52nd commencement, I extend a most cordial invitation to everyone present to attend the alumni reception, which will be held immediately following these exercises in Wood Center. The 52nd commencement exercise of the University of Alaska will close with the singing of Alaska's flag song by Gary Buckman and the benediction by the Reverend Alfred W. Eustace, Jr. Following the benediction, the audience will please be seated until the recessional of faculty and graduates is completed. Please stand for Alaska's flag song.